Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Risk Recon, a MasterCard company.
Hello and welcome to today's program. I'm Eric White. You scarcely hear the word software these days without it followed by supply chain. It's one of the biggest topics in cybersecurity, how to make sure the thousands of pieces of a software program add up to something safe. Folks at the National Institute of Standards and Technology have been leading much of the research into software supply chain issues. Federal News Network's Tom Temin got some of the latest thinking from the Deputy Chief of the Computer Security Division at NIST, John Boyens.
And this really has burst onto the scene. And I guess my first question is, there's got to be a special publication, 800-something, to deal with secure supply chains in software. Am I correct?
Yes, you are, sir. And actually, I don't know if I would say it bursted onto the scene. It's been kind of one of those Gartner hype cycles for the last 10 or 15 years where once there's a supply chain incident, it becomes very popular. And then it kind of fades away because it's a hard problem. But I will say that it has had sustained attention over the last few years. And we do have a couple of publications. I'll say our general guidance on cybersecurity supply chain risk management typically has covered both hardware, software, and services in general. It wasn't until a couple of years ago with the SolarWinds incident and the following Executive Order 14028 that really focused on software. So kind of at the same time, we were updating our special publication flagship, which is 800-161 Rev 1, and we were able to address supply chain risk guidance in that publication specific to supply chain. We focused specifically on providing guidance for software bill of materials, open source software, enhanced vendor risk assessments, and vulnerability management. This was also the first time that we were able to move kind of left of center and move out into the development realm. And we developed a secure software development framework or special publication 800-218 that was very specific in providing guidance to software developers.
And software development these days is very different from the concept people had maybe in the 80s where a new program was programmed by your programmers and everyone wrote different pieces of it and you compiled it into an application. And there were all kinds of quality check automation programs back then. Now it's more like assembling pieces from various sources in a Lego fashion almost. You might get a brand new application, but it's made of standard Lego-like pieces. And that's changed how we have to deal with software because the supply chain is not simply that supplier, but that supplier's sources of the Lego blocks. Fair to say?
That is very fair to say. The complexity is enormous right now.
All right, so then that complicates the issue because do you have to look, I guess, in NIST's thinking, at the corporate entities that supply these or at just the objects themselves?
I think both. So I think it's key to go back to the old kind of blocking and tackling of risk management, and it's knowing who the critical suppliers of that software is. It's knowing what software you have in your network, the relationship between the different technologies and software in that network, and the risk impacts that they could have. And that was one of the main things we saw in the SolarWinds incident a few years ago.
So the recent thinking then is that you need a software bill of materials in order to understand the supply parts of the software. And this is part of Executive Order 14028, and there's been a lot of development and guidance on how to use SBOMs. In your experience, does the SBOM provided by your primary supplier in general include everything that it should?
Well, right now, a lot of work is ongoing on SBOMs out of DHS CISA. SBOMs have been around for 35 plus years in the software development field. You know, when they are developing a big software package and they're using third-party software, they usually get the software bills of materials or component inventories, which is another name for them. But that's at the development stage, and there's usually non-disclosure agreements. SBOMs at the consumer phase are just fairly recently and still fairly nascent. So I would say that understanding the provenance of software, SBOMs are clearly where rubber hits the road. However, organizations need the capability to both consume and proactively use those SBOMs. If they don't, then SBOMs merely become shelfware until there's an incident or known vulnerability. SBOMs are a critical piece of supply chain risk management, but they're not a silver bullet, and they require an organization to have a broader and deeper vulnerability management program established in order to really reap the benefits of SBOMs.
We're speaking with John Boyens. He's Deputy Chief of the Computer Security Division at the National Institute of Standards and Technology. Yes, that ability to operationalize or do something about what's in the SBOM, that's really crucial. Otherwise, yeah, we got an SBOM, and then you are complying with the need to get an SBOM, but actually not using it in an operational sense to make your organization more secure. That seems like a big bridge between compliance and actually doing something to ensure cybersecurity.
It most certainly is. And, you know, outside of the software specific area, I don't know if supply chain risk management has really become a compliance measure, but definitely in the software space.
Well, what's your best advice then for agencies that want to get after the supply chain? I mean, I imagine in the federal acquisition space, there are limitations legally, statutorily, on the sources of software that can come into federal systems, but that doesn't mean it always happens.
Right. And similar to developing a vulnerability management program, trying to conduct cybersecurity supply chain risk management, you know, in 800-161, we address the critical factors that go into this. And a lot of these are internal processes that a lot of organizations don't recognize yet, but we put them as key factors. And that's such things as developing a program management office, developing roles and responsibilities specific to supply chain, establishing supply chain information sharing mechanisms. And of course, I think that the key part is having a top-down direction and dedicated resources, because without those dedicated resources, then only the bare minimum compliance pieces are going to get addressed.
And what's your assessment of how agencies are doing? I mean, do they come to you with questions? I mean, NIST is always cited as the reference for what agencies say they're doing. What's your sense of how good the government is yet at using SBOMs and at getting after that supply chain conceptually?
Well, right now, I think a lot of agencies are waiting for additional direction from OMB and DHS CISA with regard to SBOMs and where they fit in. Again, it's still fairly nascent, so I don't think a lot of agencies have the capability to consume SBOMs. I mean, that's not writ large. There are some agencies that do, but it isn't across the board.
Are there third-party sources that might be able to say, well, we'll look at your SBOMs for you and tell you where the dangers are?
Yes, actually. And that's, you know, I mean, 10 years ago, I would say no. There were very few third-party vendors at all that really address supply chain, let alone the actual services they provide. That's changed quite a bit over the last few years. I'll say that the number of vendors has increased, although I would say that they've been more focused recently on supplier illumination and conducting due diligence on critical suppliers. That, with a lot of, you know, with these executive orders and other items like SBOMs, those capabilities are expanding. So they are now offering, you know, means for agencies to consume those SBOMs as well as broader vulnerability management functions.
And a final question, is it probably good practice to ask your primary software supplier to look at its own library? I mean, for example, I knew a programmer many years ago who was programming coding, raw coding, communications protocols for a online company at the time. And it's likely that whatever that was, that coding resulted in, a communications protocol, how to connect, was reused and reused in subsequent generations of the software, corporate takeovers, transfers. So a lot of that code wasn't maliciously done, but it was simply reused and reused and brought forward into new generations of software. And so there might be some historical vulnerabilities built in. Is that something to be concerned with?
It is, and I think it's one of the toughest difficulties with open source software right now. So if there is a corrupt piece of code in a library, it quite often gets reused over and over again. So that is one of the large initiatives by the administration to address open source software. We've provided some guidance in that, more in terms of consuming or purchasing open source software. But definitely that is one of the biggest issues, particularly since most, if not all, proprietary software includes open source software.
Sure. So you think we're making progress overall?
I would say it's three steps forward, two steps back, but I have seen a sustained effort and progress over the last few years, so I'm much more hopeful than I was 10 years ago.
John Boyens is Deputy Chief of the Computer Security Division at the National Institute of Standards and Technology. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
And we'll post this interview along with a link to more information at federalnewsnetwork.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to the Federal Drive wherever you get your podcasts.
John Boyens is Deputy Chief of the Computer Security Division at the National Institute of Standards and Technology. We'll post this interview along with a link to more information at federalnewsnetwork.com. Search Federal Insights. Coming up next, we get an update on where the State Department stands on this issue. I'm Eric White.
Have you been hit with a crippling cyber attack that stemmed from a third-party vendor? Executive Order 14028 calls for changes in cyber supply chain risk management to help agencies work with vendors more securely. Risk Recon, a MasterCard company, gives you the visibility to understand and act on risk in your cyber supply chain, giving you the clarity you need to do business with vendors who meet all compliance standards. Don't wait. Learn more today at riskrecon.com.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Eric White. All right, you've heard how agencies can be mindful in securing their software supply chains, but how do they actually go about making these purchases and working with vendors? To find out, Federal News Network's executive editor Jason Miller spoke with Michael Darios. He's the State Department's Deputy Assistant Secretary and Senior Procurement Executive.
Back in, I guess, February timeframe, maybe March, you put out a memo. And the memo was, in many ways, the first of its kind across government, or one first of a kind that I've really heard of, really applying some more rigor, some more accountability to supply chain risk management. Let's just start with the basics of that memo. Give me a little bit of why you did it and what's it say. And here we are several months later, where you're at with that implementation.
Sure. Yeah. So I'll start with the rationale. The State Department is probably the most targeted by bad guys trying to infiltrate our systems. That's a fact. And we took the executive order serious and decided to start kind of, I'll say, conditioning our vendor base to think about this, because we knew that OMB was going to be driving this and trying to actually put some meat on the bones there, and they are. So the proposed rule is out, and I think folks have until December to offer their thoughts on that. And we wanted to, so we were encouraged, a lot of agencies were encouraged to put some interim policies in place. I'm not sure how many did, but we leaned forward and decided that, you know, because we are so targeted by cyber criminals, it made sense for us to start getting industry ready for it. So, you know, socializing through a policy, an interim policy, that we were going to start collecting SBOMs, software bills of material. Socializing that we were going to start requesting attestation forms, building an evaluation criteria that we would put into solicitations, so that, you know, industry had to actually start sharing their cyber plans with us and letting them know that we take it so serious that we're going to start evaluating the quality of them, right? And that could be a function of, you know, a company getting an award and another company maybe not. So that's what the whole interim policy was about. We've developed those standard clauses now and are starting to put those in use. We have a very good relationship with our CIO organization, IRM. Donna Bedden especially is the ECISO, the executive CISO for the department. She helped us in developing that interim policy. And we've got a good partnership where her staff is going to be helping us, our contracting officers, to make those judgment calls on the quality of the SBOMs, the attestation forms, et cetera. And then training is a big component of it as well. So a couple months ago, my policy shop and Donna's group partnered together to deliver training to the contracting officer community to socialize the interim policy with them and let them know, you know, what's included in the executive order, kind of go over the elements I just described. So yeah, we're taking it serious. And I think that the interim policy, just by putting that out there and letting industry know that, hey, no kidding, we care about this, right? Even before the final rule is done, I think hopefully it sends a message. You know, if the State Department is willing to lean forward and start, you know, sharing with industry that this is important and that we need to get after it together as a partner, hopefully, you know, other agencies will have a better time of trying to implement it as well, like the smaller agencies.
You're still fairly early. 9 months from a policy perspective is not a long time. What's first of all, I guess, how much is it being used? Have you used it in a couple pilots? Have you said, okay, we will, you know, try it out in a small scale? Give me a little bit of sense of where we're at today.
Yeah, so we have the clauses. The clauses are going into to RFPs. We have had some discussions. I won't get into all the details, but we've had to look at a couple of instances where did it make sense to offer a waiver or did it not, right? So overall, I'm going to say the success right now has just been driving the dialogue internally and externally with industry and starting to build out the processes that we're going to need for when the final rule launches, so that I think hopefully we're going to be ahead of the game. And because we're doing all of this work now and kind of building out the rapport with IRM, building out the process for how we're going to evaluate the attestations, I mean, the standards are there. I mean, they use the NIST standards, the CISA standards and everything. But it takes time to kind of build that muscle memory. And so that's what we're doing now. So that's really, I think, the success of it. I wouldn't say that we piloted it necessarily. It's policy. We're doing it. It's just a matter of, you know, getting industry ready, because in some cases, industry is ready. In some cases, they're not.
You mentioned Evolve. I know you can't talk too much about it. but of course, was this a good example of where this contract, this policy kind of could come into play? Because Evolve's a big IT.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. We put the clauses in the RFP. Absolutely. We are going to be looking at the quality of cyber plans for sure.
And what's the reaction, not just from Evolve, but more generally, when you've had conversations with industry, when you had that vendor management program, did this come up during that discussion? What's the reaction been?
Yeah, the IT did come up in any of those discussions. We kind of focused on other key areas. You know, some companies get it, and some companies, you know, I'm going to say don't want to get it, right? Because this is going to be a price tag for them, you know, and we understand that. Again, I think it was a good idea for us to start kind of front loading it and starting the dialogue now, so that vendors can get ready, because, you know, it's going to be pricey for a company to acquire new tools on their side to really start gaining some of that deep insight into their supply chain so that they can demonstrate that back to us. That's going to be an investment that some of those companies are going to have to make. I think some companies have been better prepared for that than others.
One of the things you mentioned was the price tag, and I think that's a big concern when we talk about SBOMs and we talk about attestation. And I know that's part of the reason why some folks are starting small, and that price could get passed back to you. Have you had that conversation with contracting officers to say, hey, if company X comes in with a scrim methodology and a plan, and they're, you know, pick the number 10% higher than everybody else, but they're much stronger, that's worth our 10% more. Have you had those conversations?
Yeah, that absolutely can, and I think, frankly, should play into the best value decisioning. We want companies that have rock solid cybersecurity plans and infrastructure. You know, again, we can't get our mission done without industry, but as a part of that, you know, industry comes in contact with a lot of important information. And so it behooves us to, when and where it makes sense, you know, possibly pay a premium in a best value trade-off decision. Absolutely.
I think that's the biggest concern I've heard about things like the Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification Program at DoD and some other of these SBOMs. Well, will the government be willing to pay that extra? Or are they going to eat the cost? Or as an industry, I brought up CMMC. Obviously, it's a DoD thing. Are you paying attention to that, generally speaking, as it relates to this bigger area around supply chain risk management?
Yeah, that's probably a question that's more suited for Donna Bennett and Kelly. But I think the short answer is yes, but I'm not smart enough on it to offer a good technical response for you.
No, I appreciate that. I just didn't know. Again, it hasn't even gotten off the ground yet. I just always ask because the civilian agencies seem to kind of play catch up. And I don't mean this in a bad way, but DOD seems to be somewhere first, and then a lot of civilian agencies follow. I wasn't sure if you were how closely you from an acquisition perspective were following this.
We're seeing that in a lot of our requirements. We are. In terms of, you know, how it's being used in the department, where it's being used, I really couldn't get into that, you know. But I think we're a little unique. I would say DHS is probably in the same situation with us, as are some of the IC agencies. We kind of have no choice but to be, you know, right up there with DOD in this space.
As you said, you all get plenty of attention from bad actors and anything that they can find a hole, they can do it. Mike, before I let you go, you talked a lot about the policy and impetus for it, but as well as the early kind of pieces and parts. There's other things you're doing, I'm sure, around supply chain risk management beyond this one policy. Can you talk a little bit about whether it's training or what are the other steps you're doing to kind of address some of these risks?
Yeah, so we've done some training. You know, we've also partnered on some pilots internally with our INR counterparts, trying to get access to some tools that would allow us to see into the supply chains of companies that we do business with. So it's not just us relying on industry to tell us what the health of their supply chain looks like, but we want to also be able to independently validate some of that. So we did some pilot work with INR. I can't go into all the details about that, but yeah, it's not just what you've seen on the surface. There are other things that we're focused on.
Because you know, I was going to ask you about those pilots because that's a key word for us in journalism. Oh, tell us more.
Yeah.
I had a really good conversation with Jimmy Hall Jr., the CIO at INR. He talked about some of the work he's doing with the classified cloud and things like that. So I appreciate the sensitivities. The last thing, Mike, before I let you go, is we've talked a lot about different topics over the course of our conversation. But when it comes to supply chain, what's the big message you want to make sure that industry knows about what state's doing, where you're going with this, and what's important?
Yeah, I think, you know, a good common thread here for everything that we've talked about is dialogue, right? And that upfront, honest conversation. I don't think that, you know, industry is just going to have it all figured out. I don't think that we have that expectation. But let's have the dialogue, right? So if there is a particular requirement where we need to have some very stringent supply chain requirements baked into the RFP or the contract, let's talk about that. And if you're going to have a challenge meeting it, we'd like to know that earlier rather than later, you know. And then we're into a contractual relationship, and then you say, well, we weren't really able to execute that. Well, you should have told us that, right? I think we want to have that kind of dialogue, honest, you know, dialogue with industry much earlier about supply chain risk. It's a shared risk. And that's probably like the final message I would offer is we understand that on our side, that it's shared risk. We want companies to be comfortable talking to us about that. In some cases, it may make sense to, I'm not going to say relax requirements, but approach supply chain health and risk differently than in another part of the portfolio, right? But it's hard when we don't know what we don't know. So we really do need industry to talk to us.
Michael Darios is the State Department's Deputy Assistant Secretary and Senior Procurement Executive, speaking there with Federal News Network's Executive Editor Jason Miller. If you missed any part of this episode, you can find it online. Head to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Federal Insights. I'm Eric White.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Risk Recon, a MasterCard company on Federal News Network.